Divided Kingdom, the Christian news program with a cutting edge many of you have come to know and trust for the truth in the 15 years since its inception. I'm Lou Caverly. My colleague, Elizabeth Cuppet Caverly, and I are here with breaking news in a number of vital areas. First is a real shocker. The headline from the Washington Times, Tuesday, May 22nd, Boy Scouts to provide condoms at upcoming World Jamboree.
Lou, this goes far beyond what we reported earlier, that the organization was dropping the word boy from its iconic former name, supposedly because it was bowing to the pressure to admit girls who would now be joining, now sort of a unisex Jugend, a Hitler-type youth organization of the future, we wonder?
By Bradford Richardson, The Washington Times. Boy Scouts to provide condoms at upcoming World Jamboree. The Boy Scouts will reportedly provide condoms at the upcoming World Scout Jamboree. The World Organization of Scouting Movement Handbook requires the host organization to, quote, ensure that condoms are readily and easily accessible for all participants and international service team staff at a number of locations on the site, unquote. The 2019 World Scout Jamboree will be held in West Virginia from July 21st to August 1st. The theme is Unlock a New World. The Boy Scouts did not immediately respond to a request for a comment. News of the condom requirement comes months after the Boy Scouts announced it would allow girls to become Scouts. Last year, the Scouting organization also changed its policy to permit membership on the basis of gender identity, meaning girls who identified as boys could become Scouts. And in 2015, the Boy Scouts ended its blanket ban on openly gay troop leaders. John Stemberger, chairman of the board of Trail Life USA, an alternative scouting organization, said it is, quote, not clear how far down the rabbit hole the Boy Scouts will continue to fall, unquote. Mr. Sternberger went on to say, quote, all of this should be deeply disturbing to the churches that are chartering Boy Scout troops. And Mr. Sternberger said that in a statement posted to the Florida Family Policy Council website. He also said, quote, these policies present a clear youth protection problem that the BSA absolutely refuses to recognize. The fact that they are requiring the condoms be, quote, readily accessible, unquote, and are communicating this to everyone, including youth participants, shows that the Boy Scouts is both anticipating and facilitating sexual conduct between minors at this event. These policies are both outrageous and completely irresponsible. Well, Elizabeth, did you notice the 2019 World Scout Jamboree theme, Unlock a New World?
Yes, Lou, I certainly think Unlock a New World contains a lot of secret aims and innuendos in the dark, perverted NWO, New World Order world. At a time when, second in the Vatican, Cardinal Pell is about to undergo a closed trial. Now, why is that? For accusations of assisting the molesting of more than 100 boys, Alex Jones has commented that this Jesuit Pope has become the father, of course he means spiritually, of the notorious NAMBLA, North American Boy Love Association. Captain Darrell Eberhard has noted that none of the Western Pennsylvania Roman Catholic clergy in the Altoona-Johnstown area accused of multiple acts of pedophilia have ever been convicted. Alex Jones comments on this latest papal statement quote, it is okay to be gay, that this is a change of subject, Alex says, a smokescreen diversion away from the horrendous acts Cardinal Pell is accused of and a clever blaming of the victim. As a woman, I have always deeply resented women rape victims being told it was their fault for wearing miniskirts. And now we have to witness this tactic to quell opposition in the Swedish and German women who are subjected to the criminal acts of radical Islam immigrants. Here from the Telegraph, May 20th, 2018. Pope says it is okay to be gay, says Chilean clerical abuse victim after Vatican audience. Nick Squires, Rome, May 20th, 2018. God loves gay people, and it is fine to be homosexual, Pope Francis has reportedly said. The Pope made the remarks, which went significantly beyond his previous tolerance for homosexuality, during a meeting 3 weeks ago with a Chilean man who had been sexually abused by Catholic priests. The Pope offered a heartfelt apology to Juan Carlos Cruz, who was a victim of Chile's most notorious abusive priest, Fernando Carandima. Mr. Cruz, who is gay, said the conversation moved on from the abuse crisis to the nature of homosexuality. He told me, Juan Carlos, that you are gay does not matter. God made you like that, and he loves you like that, and I do not care. The Pope loves you as you are. You have to be happy with who you are, Mr. Cruz told El País, the Spanish newspaper. The Pope's words appeared to go further in terms of tolerance than remarks he made in 2013 when he said of homosexuals, "Who am I to judge?" Speaking to the Vatican Press Corps on his return to Rome from a trip to Brazil, he said gay people should not be marginalized, but rather integrated into society. He was responding to questions about claims of an alleged gay lobby of clerics working in the heart of the Vatican. Quote, "If a person is gay and seeks God and has goodwill, who am I to judge?" he replied. The Roman Catholic Church insists that while homosexual orientation is not sinful in itself, homosexual acts certainly are because they are, quote, against natural law, end of quote. The Vatican neither confirmed nor denied the comments that Francis reportedly made to Mr. Cruz. This is not a shift in theological teaching or dogma, said Robert Mickens, a Vatican expert and the editor of La Croix International, a Catholic publication. It was a pastoral response to an individual. The Pope always likes to deal with the individual. The Pope elaborated on his "Who am I to judge?" comment in a recent book by an Italian expert on the Vatican. The pontiff told him, "I was paraphrasing by heart the Catechism of the Catholic Church, where it says that these people should be treated with delicacy and not be marginalized." He added, "Let us not forget that God loves all his creatures, and we are destined to receive his infinite love." Mr. Cruz was one of three former sex abuse victims from Chile who came to Rome to receive an apology from Pope Francis for the years of abuse that they endured. The victims described clerical sexual abuse as, quote, "an epidemic that has destroyed thousands of lives," end of quote. Pope Francis had initially been slow to realize the gravity of the crisis in Chile and even came to the defense of a controversial bishop linked to Father Carandima, the abusive priest. But he performed an about-turn after Vatican investigators presented him with a 2,300-page dossier showing that sexual abuse of minors had been covered up in Chile for decades, in a pattern that has been repeated in many other countries, notably Ireland. On Friday, Chile's 34 bishops offered to resign en masse over the abuse scandal, an act without precedent in the history of the Catholic Church. So we do see the light of God's truth, as it is said in the Bible, nothing hidden in darkness will not come forth into the light. And we must continually pray on this program for God to shine the light. Yes, the Inspector General now in the Justice Department has asked for a special investigation of the Clinton faction, all of this spying on everybody during the election. Maybe a lot of truth will now come out, and a witch hunt for the Russian collusion lie will end. But nothing's going to change very drastically if the morality of this country does not change, if the sleeping, sold-out 501c3 churches do not change, if we do not hear them speaking out on things like this Boy Scout Jamboree, speaking out on things like Planned Parenthood and the continuing abortion, we are not going to see much change.
As your listeners know, moral opposition to the agenda of LGBT and radical Islam terrorists is squelched by hate crimes laws and regulations in Europe and Canada. Living here, where in the Trump years we Christians still have a modicum of power and freedom, we must carefully analyze and oppose Satan's from the pit of hell plans to harm our little ones. Yes, the millstone Jesus alluded to will be very heavy. But you see, we don't think these condoms being marshaled into the planned world jamboree are primarily really for the teenage boys to use with teenage girls. No, it grows more diabolical and cursed than that. And how in the name of all that's holy can there still be churches in America that profess to be Christian, yet are still sponsoring the Boy Scouts? As Mr. Stemberger said, all of this should be deeply disturbing to the churches that are chartering Boy Scout troops. Have we not remembered that other key statement? Quote, in 2015, the Boy Scouts ended its blanket ban on openly gay troop leaders. Now, is it not possible that still another use for the incoming condoms exists? The hideous seduction by closet scout leader pedophiles would be a lot easier if young victims did not exhibit AIDS and other venereal diseases. Alex Jones reported on Wednesday, May 23rd, that alcohol would also be permitted at the jamboree. Upon noting that kids as young as 10-year-old Cub Scouts could be part of the tens of thousands in attendance, quote, this is Sodom and Gomorrah, he said, explaining that one of the goals of deepest evil is to promote the loss of innocence in children. UNESCO, which Trump got us out of, is part of the satanic agenda to change and destroy family and the public school's virtue. Dr. Stephen E. Goldstone, the medical director of GayHealth.com, says he has found that 68% of HIV-positive and 45% of HIV-negative males have abnormal or precancerous anal cells. In Dr. Larry Spagimino's book, Living in Sodom Today, and this book, Living in Sodom Today, is available at the Southwest Radio Church, swrc.com, and you can call 1-800-652-1144. Once again, if you're interested in that or other publications by the Southwest Radio Church, call 1-800-652-1144. In this book, we see a list of serious possible outcomes for these young Boy Scout victims inducted into homosexuality. A significantly decreased chance of having a successful marriage. A 25 to 30 year reduction in life expectancy. A chronic, potentially fatal liver disease, infectious hepatitis, a high risk of contracting a fatal disease that destroys the immune system, frequently fatal rectal cancer, a much higher incidence of suicide when compared to the general population.
Living in Sodom describes that under the guise of teaching appreciation for diversity, in 2001, California's superintendent of public instruction formed a 36-member advisory task force to translate this so-called appreciation for diversity into state education codes. Yet there was very little diversity in the task force. It was primarily made up of gay activists, including the Lavender Youth Recreation and Information Center, LYRIC, and Gelson, the NEA, and Gay Caucus. Their 21-page report included the following recommendations at that time.
Surveying school children to probe their attitudes about homosexuality, integrating pro-homosexual and pro-transgender messages into all curricula, including science, history, language arts, and even math, creating new policies, quote, to reduce the adverse impact of gender segregation related to locker room facilities, restrooms, and dress, unquote. Posting positive grade level appropriate visual images, and that's in quotes, positive grade level appropriate visual images, quote, all sexual orientations and gender identities, unquote, throughout the school. using taxpayer dollars to establish gay-straight alliances on campuses, put all school personnel through extensive and ongoing sensitivity training, pay for a media blitz, quote, provide rehabilitation to perpetrators of discrimination, and appoint a person in each school to monitor implementation of the new programs, unquote.
And we can see that this pilot program, it's pretty long ago now. It's 17 years ago. We can see how this has been endorsed and adopted nationwide through all the celebrity TV programs that endorse homosexuality and the new family idea, all of this. Now, what Larry Spargimino, Dr. Larry Spargimino, in this powerful book, Living in Sodom Today, says, while children are being taught about the gay lifestyle, there are some things about such a lifestyle that are being suppressed. Children are never told that homosexual practices lead directly to hepatitis B infection, wrote Stanley Monteith, M.D., a massive incidence of venereal disease and a compulsive, addictive sexual lifestyle with severe emotional problems. Children are never told of the high suicide rates among homosexuals or the sadness and isolation felt by these tragic people. They are educating our children only about the positive aspects of the homosexual lifestyle in order to encourage the curiosity of youth and lead our young people into the homosexual way of death. We again applaud our late friend and mentor, Dr. Stan Monteith. Had the churches really listened to this kind of a warning, things might be far different at this point. Back to this important information from Living in Sodom Today. Times and child-rearing practices have drastically changed. All change is not bad, but this change is. CNN recently reported on a gay boom to describe the phenomenon of homosexual couples bringing their children to homosexual rallies. The days are long gone when children were confronted with male and female role models and when questions of sexual identity were not discussed. Children are now free to pick their gender roles. Christina Hoff Summers writes, throughout most of human history, children learned about virtue and honor by hearing or reading the inspiring stories of great men and women. By the 1990s, this practice, which many educators regarded as too directive, was giving way to practices that suggested to students that they were their own best guides in life. This turn to the autonomous subject as the ultimate moral authority is a notable consequence of the triumph of the progressive style over traditional directive methods of education. We are no longer teaching our children to admire the virtuous men and women of the past, but are setting before them individuals in groups of questionable morals. Progressive education has turned children loose to explore and develop their own set of values. However, contrary to all statements and appearances, these values are not really their own. Children are simply mimicking what they see in the society around them. How long this can continue before society collapses is anyone's guess. Parents, do you know what some would like to do with your children? And now, if some of you have never heard of NAMBLA, the North American Boy Love Association, here is some important information.
NAMBLA, the acronym for the North American Man-Boy Love Association, is one of the more vocal organizations pushing for the removal of age of consent laws. The organization believes that sex between adults and children, the preferred terminology is intergenerational relationships, is perfectly good as long as the child consents. The removal of age of consent laws would make sexual relations between adults and consenting children legal. NAMBLA director David Thorstad said that there is a natural and wholesome attraction to boys that is quite, quote, irrepressible, unquote, something like the attraction homosexuals have for each other. On the NAMBLA website, Thorstad states, quote, pederasty, like homosexuality, has existed and exists in all societies that have ever been studied. Homoeroticism is a ubiquitous feature of human experience, as even efforts to repress it confirm. Men and youths have always been attracted to each other, and like homosexuality in general, their love is irrepressible, unquote. Pederasts want the age of consent laws removed so that they can engage in their sexual proclivities at the taxpayer's expense. Thorstad gives a word of personal testimony. Quote, in my own case, my boyfriend is now 18, but when he was 16, I could not approach any government or state agencies for assistance with schooling or anything else for fear that moralists and television reporters would turn our life into a living hell. The law stipulates that any person who works in counseling, psychiatry, psychology, social work, teaching, and so on, who merely suspects that an illegal sexual relationship may be going on, must report it to the authorities. Investigation, harassment, hysterical and inaccurate publicity, arrest and imprisonment are the likely result, unquote. With the way things are going, Thorstad could see his wishes fulfilled and find that both society and the law is on his side. Quote, cultural experts who agree with the claims that the Supreme Court may have opened the door to legalizing pedophilia in its Lawrence versus Texas decision on private homosexual behavior point to the growing movement within academia to destigmatize pedophilia, unquote. While Justice Anthony Kennedy said that the court's decision has nothing to do with minors, thinking people may call that statement into question. In a paper entitled Sex Bias in the U.S. Code, which was prepared for the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights in April 1977, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg advocated lowering the age of consent to 12 years of age. The real child abusers.
And we must interject here that Ruth Bader Ginsburg's late husband had some very suspicious connections with NAMBLA, so she should have recused herself on that issue.
In 1999, after the book was rejected by several publishers, the University of Minnesota Press published Harmful to Minors, that's the book's title, Harmful to Minors by Judith Levine. The author argues that traditional sexual standards taught to children by puritanical parents are, quote, harmful to minors, unquote. Levine advances the view that there is really no such thing as a pedophile and that such a classification is a myth. This reflects the growing trend to destigmatize pedophilia. During its recent spring meeting, the American Psychiatric Association hosted a symposium discussing the removal of pedophilia and other categories of mental illness from its Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. NAMBLA and others of like mind view heterosexual parents, congressmen, and ministers as the real child abusers. In 1994, 82-year-old homosexual activist Harry Hay made the following comments at a press conference in the former Stonewall Inn on Sheridan Square, New York City, site of the riots that launched the modern homosexual movement in June 1969. Quote, insofar as child molestation is concerned, the most common form is this sexual coercion by which gay and lesbian children are bedeviled into hetero identities and behaviors. And this is practiced daily by the whole national and international hetero community. Parents, family, teachers, preachers, doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs, not to overlook U.S. senators and poobah media, unquote. Did he say gay and lesbian children? How does he know? Has anyone ever had their doctor say, congratulations, Mrs. Jones, you have just given birth to an 8-pound, 2-ounce homosexual boy, unquote. Hay continues, this outrageous coercion of gay kids into hetero identities and behaviors against their wills is not only sexual abuse, it is spiritually devastating rape, because the child unbecomingly is being led into developing self-loathing at the same time. For this gigantic criminal trespass against not only today's children, but also against all of us since childhood, from the queers my age of 82 down through all the generations of queers assembled here in New York, to the gay kids still being bedeviled by sexual coercion against their wills, we, the international gay and lesbian people here this week, should unite to sue the whole guilty heterosexual community lock, stock, and barrel to within an inch of their lives and for every nickel they've got as a beginning of compensation. And while we are at it, we should request our first-class citizenship as well. This could be the class action suit of the century, unquote. On June 26, 1998, Thorstad spoke to a group of some 600 people in Mexico City on the history and benefits of pederasty. He stated, quote, pederasts believed in an inherent bisexuality of human beings and argued that the influence of the medical profession gave the gay movement the aura of a hospital. Most felt that younger and older males were naturally attracted to each other, and that pederasty was a positive good for society because it helped to socialize young males and provide them with the necessary sexual outlet, thereby reducing undesirable social phenomena such as unwanted pregnancies and prostitution, unquote. This kind of reasoning is quite common. Pederasty is viewed as, quote, a positive good for society, unquote. The reasons given are highly suspect. Is this the only way, or even a right way, for young men to be, quote, unquote, socialized? Does Thorstad mean to imply that those males who have not engaged in pederasty are not socialized or poorly socialized? The idea that sexual activity is a method of socialization shows what a beggarly view of humanity such advocates maintain. Thorstad claims that pederasty reduces, quote, undesirable social phenomena such as unwanted pregnancies and prostitution, unquote. Did it ever occur to Thorstad that there are other ways of reducing unwanted pregnancies and prostitution? Pederasts, however, are convinced that they are right because they have human evolution on their side. One of the NAMBL articles, one of the NAMBL articles linked their practices to the survival of the species. Quote, Sir Julian Huxley, the great English biologist, said at the beginning of this century, no negative trait, and as you know, a negative trait is one that does not reproduce itself, no negative trait ever appears and reappears millennia after millennia after millennia, unless it in some way serves the survival of that species. We gay and lesbians may embody or have discovered some things that you folks desperately need to know about, unquote. A negative trait does not reproduce itself? Really? So then murder, rape, and violence have all reproduced themselves and must therefore be positive traits? The strong taking advantage of the weak? Gossip, hatred, maliciousness? Disrespect for all plentiful in times past? Or are all plentiful in times past, as well as today? And we should expect we'll be here tomorrow and the day after, if the Lord tarries. Are these all positive traits?
We can see the agenda here. And now we go on with Dr. Larry Spargimino's powerful writing in Living in Sodom Today. And the phone number to get that book, 1-800-652-1144. Homosexuality and Pederasty, Pedophilia, in parentheses. In a statement by Thorstad, in which he claims that the love for men and boys is quite irrepressible, it will be noted that he compares pederasty with the love that men have for each other. Men and youths have always been attracted to each other, and like homosexuality in general, their love is irrepressible. Is there any connection between the two? Are homosexuals frequently found engaging in sex with minors? The statistics clearly demonstrate that there is an undeniable connection between homosexuality and pedophilia. And now, I think this is very apropos right here as we're looking at this upcoming Boy Scout Jamboree. We want to know these statistics. Is it really a good setting there to have the homosexual leaders there with the young Cub Scouts and the alcohol? We're putting a lot into that mix. So Spargimino goes on, while there are many more heterosexuals than homosexuals, homosexuals are the major offenders in child sex abuse cases. Quote, in other words, although heterosexuals outnumber homosexuals by a ratio of at least 20 to 1, homosexual pedophiles commit about one-third of the total number of child sex offenses. There is a high likelihood that homosexuals will be homosexual pedophiles. Daily reports that, quote, the evidence shows that homosexual pedophiles cannot be narrowly defined as individuals who are solely attracted to underage boys. In fact, there is considerable overlap between homosexuality and pedophilia, end of quote. And that was a person reporting Daily, capital D-A-I-L-Y. Though homosexuals often deny this overlap, the evidence is irrefutable. Because there is still a general abhorrence of pedophilia, homosexual activists try to distance the gay lifestyle from pedophilia. Yet, quote, there remains a disturbing connection between the two. This is because, by definition, male homosexuals are sexually attracted to other males. While many homosexuals may not seek young sexual partners, the evidence indicates that disproportionate numbers of gay men seek adolescent males or boys as sexual partners. Studies show that homosexual males are sexually attracted to underage boys. In The Gay Report, by homosexual researchers Carla Jay and Alan Young, the authors report data showing that 73% of homosexuals surveyed had at some time had sex with boys 16 to 19 years of age or younger. Conversely, studies also show that male homosexual pedophiles are sexually attracted to adult males and engage in sexual relations with adult homosexuals. Homosexual activists claim that they really have the best interests of children at heart. Children, they claim, have sexual rights too. Allegedly, those of us who oppose pederasty and child pornography are repressive and guilty of stealing the sexual rights of children. According to activists, even child pornography is good for children. And I have to interject here that hearing on InfoWars, the news bite that somewhere, I believe this was Canada, they were trying to make it illegal for parents to change their baby's diaper without giving an apology. And again, the commentator's wisdom was that this is a subtle shift forward to allowing, you see, this pedophilia to be acceptable and normal. The parents' rights will be gone, but not the predators' rights. Gosh, we're going to have to apologize for what is normal. We certainly hope we're not quite at that point yet. But going on with living in Sodom today, legally, writes activist Pat Khalifa, young people are not entitled to any kind of sexual expression. The juvenile justice system often deals harshly with young people whose only crime is their homosexuality. Will the anti-pornography movement create a climate in which children can explore their own sexuality with whomever and however they choose? Or will it create a more repressive climate in which even less information about sexuality is available and even less sexual variation is tolerated? You know what just came to my mind? A horrible analogy. It was Bohemian Grove with the West Virginia Boy Scout Jamboree in June of 2018. We are worshiping Moloch. We are throwing our young people into the fire, not just the babies, to Planned Parenthood for the torturous killing and dissecting and selling of the parts, but our youth. And still, some of these, quote, churches, these abominable mainline institutions, are still hooked up with the Boy Scouts. Excuse me, the Scouts, not the Boy Scouts. How can it be? Well, according to this book, activists are on a crusade to help little children by initiating them. Yes, that's what we're doing, even as we cover up Cardinal Pell and those more than 100 boys who were initiated. What else does Larry Spargimino comment on, Lou?
In its July 1995 issue, the homosexual magazine Guide, that's its title, Guide, published an editorial and referred to pedophiles as prophets of sexual freedom. The editorialist wrote, quote, we must listen to our prophets. Instead of fearing being labeled pedophiles, we must proudly proclaim that sex includes children's sexuality. Surrounded by pious moralists with deadening anti-sexual rules, we must be shameless truth breakers, demonstrating our allegiance to a higher concept of love. We must do it for the children's sake, unquote. What do homosexuals really want? They do not simply want the removal of anti-sodomy laws, as occurred in the Lawrence versus Texas decision of the U.S. Supreme Court, nor will they rest with the end of so-called discrimination laws against gays. They want age of consent laws removed so that pederasty is legal. Congressman William Dannemeyer has stated, quote, NAMBLA is a highly visible national organization. They put out a newspaper filled with pictures of male children. They hold conventions, and they appear on a network talk show. Their announced political goal is the elimination on severe alteration of the age of consent laws. And they argue that case using the rhetoric of the civil rights movement. Little boys, they say, have as much right as adults to engage in consensual sex. And only a repressive society would prevent them from enjoying such exquisite pleasures at the earliest possible age. One international pedophile has popularized the slogan, sex before eight or it's too late, unquote. The deadly myth of consensual sex with minors. Pedophiles argue that sex with children is not harmful to children, provided that it's consensual. Allegedly, the damage comes from parents and others who overreact or frown on such activities. Parents' prudish views about such matters are harmful to minors, and that's in quotes, harmful to minors, to use the title of Judith Levine's book. Through such claims, pedophiles try to take the blame off of their shoulders for the men and women who have been physically, emotionally, and spiritually damaged by childhood sexual abuse. In an NAMBLA Web article entitled, What Does Science Say?, we read, the outcomes of sexual experiences between adults and younger people depend on whether the sex was consensual. Also, sexual experiences are powerfully influenced by expectations and the attitudes towards sex which have been passed on to younger people by their parents and social environment. Rigidly anti-sexual attitudes and fears can predispose anyone to harm. Once sexual experiences have become known by others, secondary harm to youngsters can be induced by the inappropriate reactions of parents, police, social workers, lawyers, and other adults, where no apparent harm results from the sexual contact itself, unquote. But how does one assess consent? Who can tell if a particular child really consents to a sexual encounter with a particular adult in a particular situation? Boys are especially vulnerable because they tell no one how they feel. It is not manly to do so. Children are easily manipulated and coerced into silence by an adult frown or word of disapproval. What a lust-driven child predator may consider consent on the part of the child is often nothing more than a fearful silence. One researcher points out that pedophiles are particularly susceptible to falsely apprehend the child's response and to conclude that it is consensual. Quote, sex addicts generally need instant gratification. They have a very low threshold for delaying gratification, and it's much easier to manipulate a young boy into having sex than it is to manipulate another man, unquote. As we have seen, pedophiles are often homosexuals, and homosexuals are often pedophiles. This raises another important issue regarding consent. Because a child may consent to being caressed, this does not mean that that same child will consent to being sodomized with a bottle. If intergenerational sex, and that's in quotes, if intergenerational sex is permitted, how far will be too far? What kind of activities will be, quote-unquote, legal, and which won't? Where does one draw the line? What might have seemed to be a consensual encounter with a child may later, when the child is grown, be perceived as sexual abuse by that child. The consenting child may in reality be a victim of a horrible act. The consequences of homosexual child abuse. In a web article entitled Homosexuality and Child Sexual Abuse, Timothy Daly cites several studies and writes, quote, the evidence indicates that a high percentage of homosexuals and pedophiles were themselves sexually abused as children, unquote. One study concluded that, quote, boys victimized by older men were over four times more likely to be currently engaged in homosexual activity than were non-victims, unquote. Another study concludes, Quote, one of the most salient facts or finds of this study is that 46% of homosexual men and 22% of homosexual women reported having been molested by a person of the same gender, unquote. Activists are playing with the very souls of children for their own gratification. Many homosexuals have a crazed obsession with youth. Knowing full well that sodomized children practice sodomy, they are pushing hard to create a homosexual world by their assault on children. Here is a promise given a few years ago. Quote, we shall sodomize your sons, emblems of your feeble masculinity, of your shallow dreams and vulgar lies. We shall seduce them in your schools, in your dormitories, in your gymnasiums, in your locker rooms, in your sports arenas, in your seminaries, in your youth groups, in your movie theater bathrooms, in your army bunkhouses, in your truck stops, in your all-male clubs, in your houses of Congress, wherever men are with men together. Your sons shall become our minions to do our bidding. They will be recast in our image. They will come to crave and adore us, unquote.
Along with this important topic that has been raised about the harm of our children, the other aspect continues the murder of the babies. And now we're looking at the newsletter from Missionaries to the Preborn, Iowa. And this is Dan and Donna Holman in their brave two-person crusade to stand out in front of Planned Parenthood and try to save some of the babies and the mothers from going in to the murder asylum. And we have this from May 2018. Dear friends, we often debunk the argument, it's her body, it's her choice. First of all, our bodies are not our own. God made us. We belong to God. Second, civil laws do not permit us to drug our bodies, to kill our bodies, to prostitute our bodies, or to otherwise do harm to ourselves. Third, the baby inside of a pregnant woman is not her body. It is somebody else. It is somebody with their own arms and legs, fingers and toes, somebody with their own blood type, brain waves, and DNA. It is a little boy or a little girl, her son or daughter, hers to name and to love, but not hers to kill. God commands, thou shalt not kill. Benevolent totalitarianism oversteps and perverts its God-given authority. Instead of protecting unborn children, as is their duty, tyrants issue death warrants on demand for children who are unwanted by their mothers. By forcing taxpayers to pay for this carnage, the blood guilt of approximately 4,000 children a day is imputed upon the American people. You thought maybe we were going to say those people in another country who were getting rid of all the Down syndrome babies. No, this statistic is for us here. Parents raising their children are forced to contend with tyrants who trample upon their natural God-given rights. God gives parents the authority and responsibility to raise their children in the training and instruction of the Lord, Ephesians 6:4. Judges, lawmakers, and school officials have very limited constitutional authority, 10th Amendment, in overriding parental decisions in educating their children. Special rights granted to a broad class of sex perverts and evildoers has opened up a Pandora's box of contentious, unwholesome litigation. Aberrant sexual behaviors, once outlawed, have become fully protected civil rights, which outlaw biblical instruction of Christian morals. Whatever new right is granted to one group of people is subtracted from the rights of everyone else. Special rights for sex perverts endangers all wholesome traditional families. I'm going to interrupt for a moment and ask Lou to check for that article on the Episcopal Church. Very important. You might see it there. We're continuing here with Dan and Donna Holman's newsletter. There is no possible legal redress for this sad state of affairs under our current system of governance. God-fearing parents can no longer look to the state to uphold parental rights, but must look to the state as a dangerous enemy and foe to family, community, and to our nation. And then we see some of the pictures of them there. We see babes exterminators There's a van there that says Babe's Pest Control. How ironic, driving the company vehicle to the Murderville to off their offspring. In May 2018, Ontario, Canada makes it illegal to protest, that is, counsel women outside or near abortion clinics. The ban will also automatically apply to 150 meters around the homes of abortion staff and health professionals who provide the services. Anyone who violates the safe zones will face up to $5,000 in fines and 6 months in jail for a first offense, and fines of $1,000 to $10,000 and up to a year in jail for a second or subsequent offense. Canada, like California, is a prelude to what happens everywhere else. Tyranny is emboldened by a lack of resistance. 99.99% of professing Christians will be unaffected by this legislation, as most professing pro-life Christians do not care to minister outside abortion clinics. How unlike Jesus Christ are those who abort? Christ sacrificed his life to save his children from eternal death. Those who abort sacrifice their children's lives to save themselves temporal inconvenience. A month ago, I interrupted a Bible study of 15 to 20 men at the McDonald's across from Planned Parenthood to ask if anyone would stand with me in speaking up for the babies. The pastoral leader asked, "How many followers do you have?" "Followers?" I asked. "Oh," he said, "it is just you. We will pray for you." "I don't need your prayers," I replied. "I am not the one being killed. Prayer without works is dead." And isn't this the payoff to it all? You see here, strength in numbers, the mass mentality. Had he said they had 5,000 people there, maybe that cowardly person in the Bible study would have said, "Oh, okay, count me in." No, we are cowards in America. Where are the real men? We really ask for real men to do something. And if you're listening to this program, we ask you for help for us to stay on the air. If any amount that you can give, you can send a little bit of cash, you can send a check made out to WWCR and send it to Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And again, that's Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. We want to thank those of you who have prayed for us and who have sent us encouraging letters and have sent a few contributions. Going back to Dan and Donna Holman's words, prayer without works is dead. There's a sense of normalcy and acceptance to baby murder. False religious doctrines, pietism, infant salvation, unconditional love, universal atonement, etc., which are supportive to all sin. Those with sound biblical teaching who say they are opposed to abortion experience little sense of urgency or concern for those being slaughtered. They refuse to stand up for what they profess to stand for. They offer token support instead. "We'll pray for you." There is something very wrong with the religious practice of hundreds of area churches attended by hundreds of thousands of area churchmen seemingly comfortable being absent from these killing centers. Matthew 23:15, "Ye compass sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he is made, ye make him twofold more the child of hell than yourselves." A gospel that requires no repentance justifies sin, not sinners. Reluctance to speak and practice hard biblical truths demonstrates more concern about what people think of us than what happens to them. It is absurd to hope our culture will ever abhor child sacrifice when pro-lifers and professing Christians decry exposing it. Pastors refuse to preach against it, and so few are willing to stand against it. Child sacrifice will not end in America until the Church of Jesus Christ insists this must end. Think of Donna Holman, age 83, who broke her hip last winter and then shortly was out with her walker. Aren't you ashamed? Are you doing anything for the Lord? We all know our time on earth is limited. Sometimes a 3-year-old child is taken home to the Lord. And what will you be your answer when the Lord says, what did you do? We ask and pray that you will tell youth about this program so that some of these misguided youth who are learning about Marxism being so great in our sold-out colleges, that they will begin to hear the truth, and they can go to LWRN.net, and they can pull down the app for their Android or their iPhone. That's LWRN.net, Liberty Works Radio Network, and we can be heard there on Mondays at 5 p.m., repeating at 11 p.m. You can also hear us at WWCR.com every Thursday evening, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, and on their shortwave as well, 4.840 megahertz. We know that a lot of evil appears to be beyond our control. As individual people, as taxpayers, we're all in our own lives. We all have health issues. We all have money issues. But we must know that the truth is going to come out more and more. There will be another book out by Paul L. Williams, the author of Crescent Moon Rising, which detailed the Islamic compound in Sailorsburg, Pennsylvania, with the person there that Turkey was trying to get extradited. But why do we have these compounds? Well, this book is The Day of Islam by Paul L. Williams. Again, that's The Day of Islam. And a lot more truth is going to come out about one of those compounds, Islamburg. And it's in New York, Hancock, New York. And when it was visited, they actually saw practice on the firing range. They were firing at school buses. Isn't that interesting? Some kind of a drill? Very interesting, I think. Now, Paul L. Williams was interviewed by Doug Hagman of the Northeast Intelligence Network on the Alex Jones Show. And I believe this was Thursday, May 17th, and it was a stunner, all right, because they are friends, and apparently the upshot of it all is that Doug Hagman, first of all, found out the reasons for all of these compounds here, these training compounds. Their purpose is to train jihadis and then send them to Afghanistan. They first go to Pakistan and then they go on into Afghanistan, and they create a state of tension by joining the Taliban. So you see, we can fool the American people. Oh, we need a continued military presence there. Oh, yes, because we've got to help those poor people in Kabul and everywhere else, while our troops are doing what brave martyr Pat Tillman was coming home to tell us all about. They're guarding the poppy fields, the opium, the heroin industry that has always been the hallmark of the CIA and the leading royal families and others in the world. Yes, we have this still going on. And so now, according to the information there from Paul L. Williams and Doug Hagman, the CIA is now working in the Sonora area of Mexico with the drug cartels to get the poppy fields going. So isn't this disgusting? When we see the boomerang effect that we're still using our young men over there to keep this evil going. So why wouldn't we have the effect of what we sow, we reap with the opioid suicides of our young in many of the cities in the rural areas here? We need to pray deeply that we will have churches arise, because if the churches do begin to stand up against the same-sex marriage and the pedophilia and all of the horrible things, that most of all the abortion industry, then God might help us with the things we can't change. Yes, we have Gina Haspel put in, the first woman in the CIA, and we can't really know what her role was in those secret torture sites. Maybe she's a patriotic American. You know, some of these people, these jihadis who would send their own children to be suicide bombers, they needed a little bit of special interrogation. And when we talked on the air, that an Air Force guy said it was part of his survival training. It may not have been as bad as the terrible abuses there at Abu Ghraib. We don't know. Or will Gina Haspel just continue the cover-up? And we'll have this heroin industry. She may not be able to change it, but you know what? Public opinion can change anything. That's how slavery ended with Wilberforce there in Britain. Public opinion began to get stronger and stronger against slavery. It wasn't just the Civil War that ended it. God moved, and the people responded. But will we respond when we're in such heresy as the Episcopal Church, Lou? What in the world is this?
Episcopal Church to remove husband and wife from marriage liturgy. The ultra-liberal Episcopal Church in the United States is planning to remove from its marriage liturgy terms deemed offensive to homosexuals. The words, quote, union of husband and wife will be replaced with the union of two people. And for the procreation of children will be changed to for the gift of children, reflecting same-sex adoptions. The Episcopal Church, which is part of the worldwide Anglican Communion, has been on this path for a long time. The denomination has never been a New Testament church by any biblical standard, and it has been increasingly permeated with theological liberalism since the early part of the 20th century. And this, by the way, is from Way of Life, May 18th, 2018. After heresy charges were brought against Bishop Pike, and I think I skipped a little bit there, in 1960, Episcopal Bishop James Pike said the doctrine of the Trinity is, quote, outdated, incomprehensible, and non-essential, unquote. After heresy charges were brought against Pike in 1967, the Episcopal Church adopted a resolution declaring that all heresy was out of date. In 1976, John Spong was ordained as the bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Newark, New Jersey, even though he denied practically every doctrine of the Christian faith. In 1985, the Jesus Seminar was founded with strong support from Episcopalians, including Marcus Borg of Oregon State University. The seminar weirdly claimed that Jesus spoke only about 20% of the things attributed to him in the New Testament, and that the Jesus described in the Bible is largely fiction. In 1993, a survey of nearly 20,000 Episcopalians showed that 70% believed, quote, faithful Christians can be sexually active gays and lesbians, unquote. 75% approved of living with someone of the opposite sex without marriage. In his 1991 book, Rescuing the Bible from Fundamentalism, Spong said the Apostle Paul was, quote, a self-hating, repressed homosexual, unquote. In 1998, Spong said, quote, I would choose to loathe rather than to worship a deity who required the sacrifice of his son. In April 2003, Episcopalian Bishop Charles Benenson said that Jesus Christ was a sinner. 2 months later, the Diocese of New Hampshire elected the first openly homosexual bishop in the history of the Episcopal Church, V. Gene Robinson. In June 2006, the National Convention of the Episcopal Church in America voted overwhelmingly against a resolution stating, quote, an unchanging commitment to Jesus Christ as the Son of God, the only name by which any person may be saved, unquote. And in her first sermons after being elected as presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church in 2006, Catherine Jeffords Schori referred to, quote, our mother, Jesus.
Judgment coming on America, little by little by little. Is it any wonder? We ask for prayer for Donald Trump and his family, and we ask for the truth to come out, and we ask for the Holy Spirit to convict our country so that we can have repentance and we can stand up against abortion. We can stand up for biblical principles. And if we don't, sooner or later, more than persecution will come to Christians here. The judgment on that little Bible group that said, we'll pray for you. No, we won't act. We'll pray for you. You'll be so much happier if you do what you can for the Lord. And we ask for you to pray for dear people like Phyllis Cully, our dear friend who's not very well these days. Pray that she will get some help. Thank you, Lord Jesus Christ, for everything you do for all of us. And we thank you, listeners. Good night.